Welcome to Thrive Deeper, the show based on the Thrive Bible reading guides. This is an ongoing conversation about God's Word with Thrive author, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Well, here we are, Matt, episode Thrive Deeper 145, and in the thick of Kings.
I'm here and I'm flipping between King as I look this minute. I'm flipping between Kings and Chronicles, and
yes.
I think this whole episode is going to be a little bit like that, isn't it?
It is going to be a little like that. So
it's really, man, it's interesting to see the choices of what Chronicles adds and what Kings leaves out.
Yes,
it really underscores the differences.
Yeah.
What they were drawing from these stories,
yeah,
and given some of the different contexts.
Exactly, and some of them in Kings are really short, and you think, oh, it can't have been anything very eventful happening there. Mm. Then you go across to Chronicles, and there's like, you know, chapters of, narrative around that particular king. So I think pretty much last time we covered off on Jeroboam and his rule throughout the southern kingdom.
Yeah, and we mentioned Rehoboam as well.
Him.
So we've got Jeroboam in the north has taken the northern 10 tribes away, leaving Rehoboam in the south.
Yep.
Jeroboam's kingdom is much bigger. Rehoboam initially, you know, kind of sets up to try and get it back.
Yes.
Now, a prophet says to him, don't bother, which was actually probably good advice anyway, because his kingdom was not strong at that stage and it was much smaller. Jeroboam probably would have won that one.
Yeah.
So now there's tension. In fact, between these two, more often than not, there's going to be tension between the two, between the north and the south.
Yes.
But there'll be moments where they get together, particularly to fend off foreign invaders, but it's going to be a fairly fraught relationship.
Yeah. So we're kind of picking up here in terms of biblical references from sort of 1 Kings, the second half of chapter 14.
Yeah.
And then into Chronicles.
That's right.
As well,
so there's just one thing that I'll point out about Rehoboam.
Great.
And this is actually one of these instances where the writer of Chronicles adds something. Now, of course, the writer of Chronicles isn't really interested in the kings of Israel. He's just following because that's written after the exile, you know, after sort of 500 BC. It's been a lot, you know, the northern 10 tribes are a very, very distant memory by then. So that's when the book of Chronicles is written. The book of Kings is written actually when the Jewish people are in exile.
Yes.
And in a sense, they had suffered the same fate as the northern kingdom did, which is why the story of the northern kingdom is actually important for them. And because essentially they ended up going the same direction as the northern kingdom. So that's why the book of Kings is actually interested in following the trajectory of the northern kingdom.
Right.
And there's a particular trajectory that that the writer of Kings is going to follow when he's talking about the kings of Israel. It's because, of course, the promise was given to Jeroboam that if you walk in my ways, and then I will establish you as a great kingdom, make your kingdom secure. He didn't do that. He set up the golden calves. That becomes the infamous sin of Jeroboam.
Mm-hmm.
And that idolatry sets in the northern kingdom, and that's the thing that leads to their demise. So,
and we're going to see that come up again and again and again through subsequent
years. Yeah,
and
so
the legacy of that.
That's right. So in the south, you know, there's a mixture of you know, kind of kings who follow in God's ways and others that turn to idolatry. In the end, the prevalence of idolatry is going to lead to the destruction of the southern kingdom as well as the north. So that's the relevance for the writer of Kings in following this, because it was like, that's a warning. You got a warning. You know, this is what happens when you turn away from God. He withdraws his protection from you and the world around you caves in upon you. One of the things that the writer of Chronicles, so the writer of Chronicles just interested in the trajectory of Judah or the Jews.
Yeah.
And one of the key things, and you see that this is a detail that as he expands on the stories of the kings of Judah, he tells these stories of moments when they did, even the bad ones, when they did trust in God,
yes,
or they did cry out to God. So you get these individual stories of when they cried out to God and God answered them, you know, to show that even in the midst of your rebellion and evil, if you would just turn back to me and call upon my name, that they learnt this during the period of the judges, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, then I will restore you. And that, of course, becomes important for those that came back from exile because, you know, the question is God, is the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and David and Solomon, is that God still with us?
Yes, that's right.
Is our God still with us? And the answer is yes. And if you turn to him and seek his face, yes, you will see that he is. So this brings me to the bit that that the writer of Chronicles adds in about Jeroboam. So the writer of Kings, of course, records the fact that Jeroboam was attacked by the Egyptian pharaoh, Shishak or Shoshank. Names in the ancient Near East, names can change or be changed a little bit. You know, it can be quite confusing with names. Often kings had two very different names, or often there was a couple of different pronunciations. So Shishak, as it says, king of Egypt, attacked Jerusalem. This is reading from Kings 14 and then verse 26. He says, he carried off the treasures of the temple of the Lord and the treasures of the royal palace. He took everything, including all the gold shields Solomon made. So King Rehoboam has to replace it all with bronze, which was far less valuable. So what we get here, so we see that all of that wealth of Solomon is lost. Bang, it's lost as the Pharaoh comes north with his army. He takes everything pretty much. And all is lost. And probably, here's a little bit of trivia. Probably this is when the Ark of the Covenant was taken away as well.
Okay,
it doesn't mention. It's interesting. No one quite knows why it's not mentioned at all. Now it's less relevant because it's not as though Israel's God was taken away.
No,
in fact, if anything, there was a bit of a propensity, as we see in the first book of Samuel, when they took the ark into battle. There was a slight tendency to treat the ark as a bit of an idol.
Yes.
So it may well be. I mean, we don't know for sure, but it may well be. But this is when the Ark of the Covenant was was taken away.
Yeah.
So that's all we have really. Now we see that. Now, we actually know that this was a major campaign on the part of Egypt. They actually wanted to subjugate the whole area. Now, because of internal weaknesses in Egypt, they basically drew tribute, which was all of this treasure.
Yep.
They basically plundered the nation, then went back down south to deal with their issues down in the south. Now, in Chronicles, though, when the Egyptians are doing their thing in the land. It says here in Chronicles 12, let's read from verse 5. Right, yep. Then the prophet Shemaiah came to Rehoboam and the leaders of Judah who had assembled in Jerusalem for fear of Shishak, the Egyptian pharaoh. And he said to them, this is what the Lord says, you have abandoned me, therefore I now abandon you to Shishak.
Yeah.
Verse 6, the leaders of Israel and the king humbled themselves and said, the Lord is just. When the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, this word of the Lord came to Shemaiah. Since they have humbled themselves, I will not destroy them, but will soon give them deliverance. My wrath will not be poured out on Jerusalem through Shishak. They will, however, become subject to him so that they may learn the difference between serving me and serving the kings of other lands.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Writer of Kings is less interested in that moment.
Yes.
But the writer of Chronicles wants to show how even in the midst of Rehoboam's disregard of God, that when he humbled himself and he sought the face of God, God answered.
There was
bang.
Mercy. Yep.
You know, and we're going to see that feature throughout these books. Yeah. So that's Rehoboam. Let's leave Rehoboam behind in the dust as we scoot through this. Rehoboam's son, Abijah, becomes king. He doesn't follow God. There is war between him. It says in 15 verse 6, there was war between Abijah and Jeroboam throughout Abijah's life.
Yep.
we have a long, again, about Abijah, we just get a sort of couple of paragraphs in the Book of Kings, but we have a much longer account in
chapter 13.
In chapter 13. It tells the story about how one of these battles with Jeroboam, how Abijah did actually trust in God at one point.
Well, he was completely surrounded. And basically completely surrounded. They were going to be completely annihilated.
That's right. They were going to be completely annihilated. And then it says in verse 14 of 2 Chronicles 13, it says, Judah turned and saw that they were being attacked at both front and rear. And here it is. Then they cried out to the Lord.
Yeah.
The priests blew their trumpets and the men of Judah raised the battle cry. At the sound of the battle cry, God routed Jeroboam and Israel and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And then it says down in verse 18, the Israelites were subdued on that occasion and the people of Judah were victorious because they relied on the Lord, the God of their ancestors.
Yeah, that's right.
So even in the midst of his rebellion, yet again, this is the key theme in the Book of Chronicles. Yep, you got it really wrong. You went way off track. Even in the midst of your, if you cry out to God, there is nothing that God wants to, more than for you to turn back to him. Mm. You don't ever get to the point where you think, oh, I've gone too far. It's too, you know, I can't cry out to God now. No, the writer of Chronicles saying, no, if you turn back to God, he will show mercy because more than anything, he wants his children to come back to him and to walk with him.
And we'll see that kind of issue with a subsequent king,
you
know, where he perhaps does feel that he's gone too far.
That's right, with King Asa. Mm. So, and yet again, we have quite a short account of King Asa's rule in the Book of Kings. The Book of Kings is speedily showing a trajectory. It's a much more, it's a much briefer account. It moves quicker because it wants to show a general trajectory of where things, how things ended in the exile.
Right.
So, Asa is a good king. His heart was fully devoted to the Lord. He has this moment where he's attacked and he makes a treaty. He's attacked by the Arameans, makes a treaty with the king of Israel so that he can help him. We're briefly told that he has some disease in his feet, but that's pretty much all. Basically, he was a good king in the book for the writer of Kings. Now, we get a much longer account in the Book of Chronicles of Asa, king of Judah. And it's one of my favorite stories. It's one of my favorite stories. It is a tragic story. Mm. It says about Asa, king of Judah. He did what was right. And this is 2 Chronicles 14 from verse 2. Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He removed the foreign altars and the high places. He smashed the sacred stones, cut down the Asherah poles. He commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their ancestors, and obey his laws and commands. I've highlighted in my digital Bible, whenever it refers to seeking the Lord, I've highlighted this and it's, you know, these green highlights all the way through the Book of Chronicles. So, you know, he builds up and anyway, he tells this story, which isn't recorded in the Book of Kings, how Azira the Cushite marches out, one of these kings, probably from the sort of more from Arabia, somewhere down there, comes out with an army, thousands upon thousands, right? Chariots and all of this. And he takes up battle positions. And then it says in verse 11 of 2 Chronicles 14, then Asa called to the Lord his God.
Yeah.
And we have this beautiful prayer of Asa about how he relied upon the Lord, and this army against all the odds was completely crushed.
Yeah.
It says, such a great number of Cushites fell that they could not recover. They were crushed before the Lord and his forces, right? Mm. God fought for Asa. Great. So Asa responds by instituting this great reform and
revival in Judah.
That's right. This prophet Azariah comes to Asa and he says in chapter 15, listen to me, Asa and all Judah and Benjamin, the Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. This is, again, I've underscored that in green because it's this theme in the Book of Chronicles. And so he assembles all the people. It says in down in verse 12, they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord,
yep.
the God of their ancestors, with all of their heart and soul. And it says they sought God eagerly and he was found by them. So the Lord gave them rest on every side. Mm. Okay. So this is, as remember, there's this constant warring
yes.
between the northern kingdom. So this is a moment of rest. The Lord gives them rest.
And interesting here, it's interesting also that by this stage, the tribes of Ephraim, Manasseh and Simeon have also kind of defected, in a sense, to the rule of under king.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
yeah.
they'd seen God at work in this and
acknowledged
that, and they were, you know, coming.
That's right. So that even the northern kingdom there is losing ground.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, so as the writer of Kings points out, and it says this down in verse 17 of 2 Chronicles chapter 15, you know, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all of his life. That's sort of general statement. But then we get this tragic story. It says in chapter 16, in the 36th year of Asa's reign, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah to prevent anyone from leaving or entering the territory of Asa, king of Judah. And he, sorry, this is where I'm going to correct what I said before. It wasn't the Arameans that were attacking. It was actually the northern kingdom that attacked. And the problem, he goes to the Arameans for help.
Treaty.
That's right. And makes a treaty with the Arameans, which is even worse.
He actually asked them to break the treaty they had already made
with
the northern kingdom.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Mm. So the writer of Kings records that, but there's no real comment about that, okay, or that's not problematized. But here it is. Here this is a problem because it's Baasha, king of Israel, very weak northern kingdom, and he goes up and he fortifies, basically he lays siege to the city of Ramah, which is one of the Judean towns. Mm. So it's not a big issue. It's certainly not as big as the Cushite invasion, right?
No, that's right.
So Asa takes all of this, all of the gold out of the Lord's temple. Man, and that's a big deal because that's stuff devoted to the Lord, right? He takes it and he gives it to Ben-Hadad, king of Aram. He says, break your treaty because he had this treaty with the northern kingdom and help me out here.
Essentially, it's a bribe.
Yeah. You know, help me out here. Like, you got to help. So he's going, he's running off to, so this is this devastating moment and you sense the grief.
Yeah.
You know, the real grief of God, this really grieves God. And it's in verse 7.
It doesn't seem like it was all that long ago that he's standing in front of the people saying, because we've trusted in the Lord and we've sought the Lord, this is why we find ourselves in
and
this place.
And they entered
now.
Into a covenant to always seek God. And this is, you know, I mean, this is what, because essentially they entered into that covenant under Moses.
Yes.
Didn't they?
Yes.
They entered into that covenant again under Joshua. Mm. We are going to devote ourselves to the Lord. Again and again and again, they entered into that covenant with Solomon.
Yes.
We are going to seek the Lord, right? We absolutely, you know, we're going to be a people who are characterized by going to God first when we have problems, right? Yeah. That's going to characterize us. So, and we've seen from the story of Asa that when this vast Cushite army comes against him, that they go to God, he answers. God can do this, right?
Yes.
But in this case, for some reason, and we don't know why, Asa has this lapse of faith.
That's
right.
And
so Hananiah the seer, this prophet, comes to King Asa. It says in verse 7, and he says, because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Were not the Cushites, the Libyans, a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horsemen? Yet when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hands.
Yeah.
For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. Mm. You have done a foolish thing, Asa. From now on, you will be at war. So no longer the peace. He's at war.
That's
why?
Right.
Because he didn't trust in the Lord. And then
Peace period had probably been around a decade, I think. Probably. It would have been around 10 years, I think, the period of peace. So quite a substantial.
And this happens right at the end, you know,
as
you think, wow, what a tragedy. And then it kind of gets worse because it says down in verse 12, in the 39th year of his reign, Asa was afflicted with a disease in his feet.
First of all, he got angry with the seer and chucked him in prison.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
You know, and so he was angry.
Yes,
about
important
that.
Detail. Thank you. Yes.
And
yeah.
And then
so he's, so actually, and that's a key point, Stu, because you know, he could have said, oh, and repented exactly. and turned back to the Lord, right?
Yep.
When that oracle was brought to him, you know, but he doesn't.
No.
He actually...
You didn't tell me what I wanted to hear.
Yeah,
so
throws the prophet in prison.
Yeah.
And then it says, at the same time, Asa brutally oppressed some of his own people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, this guy is suddenly in a really bad place. What's going on? Mm. It's, you know, it's not dissimilar to Solomon, you know, because in a sense, Solomon, it ended up, I mean, he brought great prosperity to the nation. Everything was going well, real golden age. But by the end, he was really burdening the people.
Mm.
I mean, he was not quite, but they were almost nearly slaves, you know, man, it was terrible. So this is, you know, same sort of trajectory here, tragic trajectory.
Mm.
And it says, though his disease was severe.
So this is the disease died, in his feet.
In though his disease, even in his illness, it says here, he did not seek help from the Lord, but only from his physicians. You know, not that there's anything wrong with seeking help from the physicians, but, you know, like, and you think, I wonder why he doesn't even then, you know, well, maybe he thought back, I'm beyond it now. Because let's face it, he'd imprisoned a prophet of the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, wow, I've done that. I've repressed my own people.
He'd used all the money from the temple.
I've emptied the temple of all its. Man, he's probably thinking, no, I've gone too far.
Yeah.
I've lost it now. God doesn't want to talk to me now.
And we can feel like that. Sometimes.
We can.
Absolutely.
I've gone too far.
Exactly right. You know, and the tragedy. God's not going to accept me now.
That's right. And the tragedy is, and this is what the message really, and this is what the chronicler wants us to get here, is that reality is God was grieved even at this point. I just want you to turn back to me. I just want you to come back to me. God was willing to hear him, you know, but he just thought, you can never go too far. And this is essentially the message of Chronicles. Yes, you turned away from God. Yes, but God accepts you.
Yes.
You know, and we can move forward now from where we're, it's just a profound message.
And it's interesting also just looking through that, it's in these cases, or what's reported here in Chronicles anyway, it's not until they're actually at a point where it is hopeless unless God steps in that we often turn to God.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're happy to keep doing things in our own strength when it looks like we can achieve, but when it gets to the impossible, you know, and in both of those cases, I think they were outnumbered at least 2-1 in those battles. It wasn't until that moment where, like, well, I can't do this.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It's either God or it's no one.
Yeah.
It's only at that point that they actually turn to
God. But that's okay. You know? Because in a sense, the message is God would rather you turn to it. Because that's
exactly
the thing, we go off track. I mean, maybe, you know, for someone who's been years, maybe even, and then something happens, you think, oh, I can't.
Yep.
That's a bit, you know.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's a bit of an insult if I now suddenly start praying. No. Mm. No, God just wants you to call out to him.
Yes.
You know, and if your circumstance means that becomes the occasion where you realize that, oh, actually I do need God, that's better. So, you know, so we then in Kings, now we flip because we're flitting between, aren't we? And it goes down to, and we have a series of accounts of what's happening up in the north. Right? This is during the reign of Asa.
Which just
and what can we
spiraling,
say, Stu? It's that's right. It's carnage.
Downhill.
It's absolutely carnage. Yeah. So, so Nadab becomes king in the south. Now Nadab is in the north. He's the son of Jeroboam.
Yep.
Okay, so this looks like a dynasty.
Yep.
See, that's the sign of success in the if you have a dynasty. And we see this. There's an enduring dynasty in the south, in Jerusalem, in Judah. So this is kind of looking good. Nadab becomes king. He reigns, but he does evil in the eyes of the Lord. He follows in the way of his father, committing the same sin his father had caused Israel to commit. That's going to be the assessment. We're going to hear that repeated throughout this. It's always going to refer back to the sin of Jeroboam.
Mm.
You know, I think this says something about legacy, you know, that the gods that you set up are more likely than not going to be the gods that your children worship.
Yes.
And we see this happening here. And but there's a plot against him. There's a civil war. Baasha, son of Ahijah from the tribe of Issachar, plots against him, strikes him down. He becomes king. As soon as he becomes to reign, he actually begins to kill off He kills off Jeroboam's whole
family.
These
are pretty short reigns. So Nadab was only like 2 years.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
This isn't happening over a long period of time. This is happening
so
pretty quickly.
Jeroboam's whole family is cut off. Now, remember, God had promised Jeroboam, if you walk in my ways, I will set up for you an enduring dynasty.
Yes. Yeah.
But he doesn't. Mm. And his whole family is wiped out. In the next generation. Yeah. So then Baasha becomes king of Israel. He also does evil. He follows in the same sins.
Yeah. And Baasha was the king that we just heard about Asa fighting against. And Baasha was the one who was building the fortress to prevent people getting to Judah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Baasha.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a sense of promise for Baasha. I mean, he hears from a prophet, the prophet Jehu. He's just not responsive to God. This prophet comes and basically predicts doom over his house. Yep. So his son, let me see if there's anything else to say about this. So, no, he just dies. Yep. He dies. His son succeeds him. So the question, is this another, another try at a dynasty, right? Baasha's become, is his, now his son takes over. Okay, this is looking good. Elah reigns two years.
Yep.
Zimri, one of his officials who had command of half his chariots, plotted against him. So here we have yet another internal revolution.
Yeah.
Elah's struck down, and Zimri takes his place, and he kills off all of Baasha's family.
That's right.
Right, so that he can't have a dynasty. Mm. Look, in the ancient world, this all means something. This means that this is just chaos.
Yeah, yeah, clearly.
This is chaos here. Continual infighting. Zimri becomes king.
Yep.
He reigns all of
7 days.
Wow. This is really going downhill, Stu. Like really going downhill. A certain Omri plots against him.
And essentially he committed suicide. I think he basically burned himself down.
Yeah,
palace.
Commits suicide.
Yep.
So Omri takes over.
Yep.
And now it's interesting here, Stu, actually, because Omri, we only get, again, a few verses about Omri.
Mm.
Because all for the right of kings, look, Omri becomes king. I mean, he becomes king, through this plot. He is also going to be succeeded by his son, Ahab.
Yep.
But Ahab's family then is going to be wiped out.
Yep.
We'll see that. We'll get to that. So that's all that's really relevant because he follows in the ways of Jeroboam. And so that, yes, though his son succeeds him, his son also is evil. And that's the infamous Ahab who marries Jezebel. Probably it may well be that Omri married his son off to Jezebel.
Right.
That may well be the case. Mm. We'll say a little bit about that when we talk about Ahab.
But again, the sins are largely around idolatry and provoking God in terms of the people worshipping other idols, other gods.
Yeah. Now, Omri, interestingly, Omri is actually well known. He becomes quite a well-known international figure.
Right.
I mean, Omri is quite a gifted politician, quite a gifted ruler. He really expands expands the Northern Kingdom,
right,
actually becomes quite prosperous under his rule. There is later Assyrian records that refer to Israel as the House of Omri.
Okay.
So so that means something because if way over in Assyria, they know about you, House of Omri, you've really, in worldly sense, you've really got some success.
Mm.
But for the writer of Book of Kings, there's no success here. Yeah. Like he may have been a really powerful king. He's the one, by the way, that puts the capital in Samaria.
Yes.
Builds Samaria up a capital. And there are excavations there in Samaria to this day.
And yet he was only king again for 12 years and yet was able to clearly build this reputation.
Well, in 12 years, he does a lot.
Yeah,
he does a lot and it becomes a very prosperous kingdom. Probably, this is probably the beginning, in the midst of that prosperity, probably the beginning of a lot of injustice.
Right.
You know, big gap between the wealthy and the poor. You know, the famous story about Ahab taking Naboth's vineyard probably wasn't an unusual kind of thing.
Event.
So it's a wealthy kingdom, but it's not in a good state.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's not, you know, there's no justice in this kingdom. Mm. But look, the writer of Kings isn't interested in how how politically successful he was. He was a failure, and his legacy is gonna be destroyed when Ahab becomes king.
And as we often see, if you want to find out more about him, then look it up in the historical records of Israel's kings.
Yeah.
I'm not going to speak to it here in any detail.
Moving on. Yeah, exactly.
King Ahab.
He's basically irrelevant. Omri, and you know, an ancient hang on a minute. Wasn't Omri a big deal in the ancient world? Yeah, but not a big deal in God's economy. If anything, he just was part of the problem.
Yeah,
because of course his son Ahab becomes king. Mm. Ahab was married off to Jezebel, who was a Phoenician princess.
Yes,
Phoenicians were really important traders. They were big in the shipping industry in the day.
Yeah,
so if you wanted some hefty trade, then the Phoenicians were your people. And it's kind of, you know, Solomon had a close, in order to build his wealth, he had a treaty with the Phoenicians, whose capital was Tyre. Tyre and Sidon were the capital for the Phoenicians. So he builds this, Solomon built that alliance.
Right.
Yep. King of the Sidonians, that's basically the Phoenicians, Tyre and Sidon are the two major cities up there. Jezebel, as with when Solomon married these women, they come with their own gods.
Religions and gods.
And they're, you know, these are important trade alliances, so you don't want to mess with that. Mm. They got to let them do what they want to do, otherwise they're going to write home to Dad and you'll be in problem. You'll be in trouble. When we get to Ahab and Elijah, we're going to hear a lot about Jezebel.
Yes.
Because while Ahab remains at least nominally devoted to Yahweh, the God of Israel, she's going to set about wiping out that, that religion wanting to establish
Baal,
the worship of Baal in Israel. So,
and in fact, Ahab actually builds a temple.
Builds a temple to Baal. Because again, he's got to keep for the sake of the prosperity of the kingdom, he's got to keep this alliance happy. Mm. And so Jezebel comes with a lot of power, really.
Yeah, right.
She's pulling levers, you get the sense behind the scene. Yeah. But look, we should say something about Jehoshaphat because... are we talking about Jehoshaphat today?
I think we might end up coming to him a little bit later.
Yeah,
actually,
let's come to him later. Yeah. So as I said, Ahab, again, Omri, Ahab, the house of Omri becomes very successful. You see that during the time of Ahab. This is the time when God really starts to, speak louder to this people. You're going way off track here.
Yep.
And you're about to, because way over in the north, as this is happening, northeast.
Yes.
The Assyrian Empire
is
growing, and there's a storm coming their way, and it's going to completely wipe them out. And they are not the house built on the rock; they're the house built on the sand right now.
That's right.
And the prophets Elijah and Elisha and subsequently Isaiah and Isaiah and Amos, are going to be speaking to these northern kings saying, you need to get your act together because there's a storm coming and anyone not built on the rock, as Jesus said, is going to crash.
Mm.
And the sad and tragic story of Israel is that it does crash.
Completely and utterly.
Yeah. Because they hold on to this trajectory. Mm. There's a profound lesson in this, Stu, that I think we really need to grasp. The God that we worship, the gods that we set up, and what I mean by that is who we rely on.
Mm.
Who do we really rely on? Where do we find our security?
Or
we can, as families, we can,
yep.
you know, we can sort of bring our kids to church, and but we can at the same time kind of be at least implicitly telling them to sort of follow the Australian dream of, yes, you know, wealth and security and,
yes,
and you know, and career and sort of push, you know, you got to, you know, because we want them to have a good life and be secure. But really, how ultimately, where is the only security is in, that's God's right, purpose, you know, and who knows what's coming up in the future and what we might need to be equipping our children for. And I believe that there's a profound message in this. You know, we need to be equipping our children for more than just being, you know, prosperous citizens that have their own worldly security. Man, who knows what's up ahead? We need to be teaching our children to rely on God, because as the writer of Chronicles shows us again and again and again, when we rely on God, it changes everything. It can change our whole trajectory. That's what sets up a legacy for the future.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thrive Deeper. Our home on the internet is thrivetoday.tv. You can contact us, ask questions, see all our resources and much more at our website, thrivetoday.tv. We really appreciate the questions and thoughts about what you're reading as we go through the Bible with Thrive. Until next time, our prayer is that these shows will inspire you to go deeper and thrive.